Hello and welcome to the 11th episode of Pull the Trigger. I'm Trigger. With me today are founding members of Trash Rocket, AJ Monster.
Hey!
Monster, glad to see you're back from assignment.
I hope
you learned a lot about quicksand in Washington, D.C.
So much.
Okay.
I thought it was going to take out like a whole city block or something.
Yeah,
it's quicksand.
I kept hearing that. There's quicksand in Washington, D.C. It was so weird.
It's scurry.
So we do have some music news.
Whoa.
And it would be the opening of Bum Rush Vinyl Shop. It's been a huge success yesterday.
Yes.
Slammed. I saw the video time lapse on their Instagram. It just...
Oh, okay.
It never let up. And when I got there at 5 o'clock... from my other job, it never lit up until I finished. It was to the point where we were even seeing people who were looking to come in, and eventually we were just to the point where we're like, okay, we might have to let them
go
home. It was great. It really turns out people want physical copies of music. We were selling CDs.
It was inspiring to see, yes.
And LPs, new and used.
I couldn't even get to the CD section. It was so busy.
We have a lot of REM there. It was good to see
in
them.
In the CDs?
Yeah. We sold one lady yesterday. I want to say she bought $30 to $40 of the REM stuff, and she said she didn't think she got it. She did not think she got all of it.
Hmm.
And I said, I'm pretty sure we have some more in the back, too. And we were looking more today, trying to find the classic metal stuff. We had one guy who was coming in, and all he wanted was classic metal, and I found... 1974 Judas Priest record.
Oh, okay.
Was it the rock and roll of the looks like the Coke?
Yes.
Yeah, that one.
Iron Maiden? I saw Somewhere in Time.
We have Somewhere in Time. Yeah, I already had that one. Whatever.
I thought maybe, the picture disc came early. Oh, it's not that.
And then, of course, as I was pricing things, I go over to the 45 section when I'm working. And what are the first two 45s? Motorhead. Motorhead is the shit, first of all. So, obviously, I'm buying those two albums. Or two 45s, I should say.
45s, yeah.
And the interesting thing was the cover of... what was the song I was talking to you about last? It's the Metallica song.
I can Nothing Else Matters?
Nothing Else Matters.
Right.
He recorded that in 2008. And I knew that I had never heard the original version. And I thought, well, this must be the 2024... remaster
I thought
of this
you never heard Metallica,
particular single.
Yeah, yeah.
So I flip it over, and it was not the version I'd always heard, which was the remix that made the tribute to Metallica.
So
this is the original one, like where the strings were higher up in the mix and Lemmy's voice is down in the mix, which I think is better because Lemmy's voice doesn't really lend to piano.
I can see that being better.
Uh-huh. Piano and strings. Because it's so different from Motorhead.
I was going to say, you should take notes, Billy Corgan. No.
Yeah. So that was really, really cool. And the other one was a leather case.
So for the Motorhead?
Yeah, okay. Which is sweet. And what was also interesting, I still don't need my 45 adapter because there were little holes. So mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm. I love when that happens.
Yeah, don't need the 45 adapter.
Yeah.
Hmm. Then
I'm like, I'm not gonna say
no.
We still have Like a Prayer to get to, folks.
right.
Dead Oceans. I want to say that if there is a record label that I geek out on right now, it's definitely Dead Oceans.
He does.
I want to say that just about every act on their label I like.
Trash Rocket. No.
And then they have a whole bunch of albums that are dropping between now. And I want to say the end of the month of May. Yesterday, of course, the new Japanese Breakfast album for Melancholy Brunettes and Sad Women came out. Great record. And I could not understand at first all the critics were talking about how it has some similarities to The Cure's Disintegration. Besides being half the length, I didn't hear it until I watched the lyrics on Apple Music coming through, and then I understood the references to The Cure's Disintegration. Because it definitely, from the musical side, does not have a real sad feel. And then you read the lyrics and you understand, oh, this is exactly how Robert Smith would do it. He would put music that wasn't quite so sad, and then he would put lyrics on top of it that were just, you know, reflective on a moment that was really painful to him. So I hear that. Mercy, M-R-C-Y, they had an album come out last year, Volume 1. Amazing. And in May, they have, wait for it, Volume 2.
Whoa.
And what I've heard so far, again, great. That comes out in May. Duran Jones and the Indicators, I know, comes out on streaming in May. According to the shop, we think it might be June for a physical copy. Mitski has another album coming out very soon. That's just to name a few. And so I'm really excited about what's coming out on Dead Oceans. Hope to see you all in the shop. If you want some Dead Ocean stuff, come see us at 2225 Plank Road, otherwise known as Route 3. Come see us and see what we can do for you. Now today, we're going to talk about two albums that are on the list of Apple's top 100 albums of all time. Dun, dun. We have 77, Madonna's Like a Prayer, and at 89, Lady Gaga's The Fame Monster. That's kind of weird because the Madonna album came out in 1989. They could have put a 1989 album at 89, and they totally blew their opportunity. Mm. Whatever.
It's messed up.
Yeah.
So bad.
So I guess we should get into it.
Okay.
Madonna's Like a Prayer, 1989. For me, it was a CD.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to even say that I'm a closet Madonna fan. And of course, we have Hodge here wearing his Tiffany shirt, you know.
Madonna. Actually, yeah, in the age of like CDs before streaming, I'll say this, that like, I decided to put every Madonna song I knew, which basically was every single and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It filled 3.5 discs.
Jeez.
So I'm like, and I was like, man, if I went by number of songs, they might be, she might be second to The Cure right now. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know anything like her last album or two, but back in the day,
I haven't heard any of the newer stuff. Okay, so 1989's album, controversial to say the least.
No, come on. I'm just kidding.
There was no controversy on this one at all. Mm-hmm. Definitely an evolution over the previous albums. I want to say that her voice definitely grew legs, mm-hmm. If that makes any sense to you.
Yeah.
I hear a much stronger presence in her voice on this album. It almost sounded like they cut the low end out in her previous records. I don't know if it was a mic thing or if she just said, I'm going to sing with more gusto.
And it was just great to see, coming out of True Blue, that she didn't pull it off again with this album. Because that had, what, 5-6 singles on it.
Mm-hmm. So I guess we should start with the first track, which is like a religious tune, Like a Prayer.
Oh, yes, like a prayer. Sung in churches everywhere.
Sadly true. Sadly true. Like a Prayer does have gospel elements, and I think that's why people get confused. Of course, they have the choir. It gives it that spiritual feel.
And like a song from last week, first track on the album, who do you first hear? Madonna.
Yeah, not Madonna. I believe this one, you hear some Prince.
Prince is playing the opening guitar.
And what was interesting, though, and I think people do get confused, because she does use God in the song.
The imagery in her.
And intertwines it with a particular activity that requires you to be on your knees.
Praying.
Yes, of course.
I love praying.
Me? Wait. I shouldn't say me too. Not me too. Wait.
Go for it, huh?
And then, even more wild, didn't this song end up being used for Pepsi as a commercial?
I think so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I get down on my knees, too, for a Pepsi every now and again.
And because Madonna, they even, at the time, you know, in the world, they allowed her to have the video uncensored with burning crosses behind
it. I know, yeah.
Where Ozzy was like, if I did that, I'd be crucified.
And I also want to say, isn't this one of the few videos where Madonna is sporting something close to her natural hair color?
Yes. I did like the look she had for that one.
Yeah. I thought she looked very good.
Because it instantly changes by Express Yourself.
But. Yeah. Speaking of which, do we have anything we want to add to Like a Prayer?
Oh my God, there's so much to that song. but now I'm blanking.
Yeah. I do like the construction.
It's one of her crowning achievements.
Yeah, I like the construction of it. I think the construction of that song is definitely one of the stronger songs she's ever had, regardless of where you're going with it lyrically. I find that the build
definitely
was
one
fantastic.
Of her highs, like Papa Don't Preach would be, I guess. Or
I want to say the next song might be my favorite Madonna song ever.
Go for
maybe.
It.
Maybe. It's a toss-up between this one and Vogue, which again is another one that has more gusto, and I feel like if she'd have put it on this album, it would have fit.
What was Vogue. That for? Dick Tracy?
Yeah.
Soundtrack?
Some, yeah. Express Yourself.
Whoa.
It's an upbeat song.
Second best.
And I feel...
Put your love to the test.
I feel you can definitely hear that empowerment and self-respect and believe in yourself message. Now, I did learn something new today. And now that I hear the rhythm and I start counting it in my head, and when she hits the emphasis on the notes, apparently she was inspired by Sly and the Family Stone for this song. And couldn't figure it out. And now you start singing it. That's exactly how Sly constructs the songs and how he delivers the lyrics. Mm-hmm. So I guess that makes sense.
And Born This Way. No, wait, that's backwards. No.
And then, again, she talks about being genuine, and you want to actually genuinely care about someone and not worry so much about the material pieces. Which, again, you all are probably asking, but hey, isn't she the same one who wrote Material Girl? Yes, indeed mm-hmm. she is. So maybe we're seeing some professional growth or internal growth with Madonna mm-hmm. in, what, 5 years' time? Because didn't Material Girl come out like 84, 85?
That kind of represents the beginning. Yeah, yeah. Like a virgin and stuff.
Something like that.
Because even in True Blue, there was definitely a growth.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes.
So that's what I'm getting particularly from that song, from her previous materials. And that's where I hear the growth compared to her previous works. The only album I like of hers more, again, not on the list, Ray of Light. I feel that's absolutely just wonderful electronic. And I think it has something to do with the fact that it did come out in my bleep, bleep, blurp, blurp period.
Mm-hmm.
Or roughly, maybe just a little bit before, but I really got into that style of music. And I've always loved that album. The one followed it, Time Goes By. So what is that one called? I even have it mixed together. What the hell is that album called?
I'm
something on the dance floor. Something on the dance floor.
I was going to say Blood on the Dance Floor, but that's Michael Jackson.
We can look it up. I'm sure it's... I know it's something on the... Confessions on the Dance Floor. That's what it's called.
Remember we played that song thinking people are going to hear the ABBA and Madonna aspects, and next week at the place we were doing, they wanted modern music.
Yeah,
we did a retro place, and no one heard that song that way.
Yeah, and yeah, thanks Madonna for totally ruining the vibe.
Yeah, I kind of lost track of her for a bit. Yeah, you said, and then Ray like him. I saw Frozen, and the first thing I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, this is good. That guitar, then you have the build up with the synths.
If I, yeah.
Oh, man. Just fantastic. So let's get to track three. Now. That being said, can't wait till we get to do this artist.
Okay.
Because, again, we're going to fanboy really hard over... I like both albums, don't get me wrong. Still the best concert I've ever seen, and it's not even remotely fucking close. Prince. If you have seen Prince live, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Prince played keyboards. He played drums. He played bass. He played guitar. He played trumpet, saxophone.
Accordion.
And he did all of the stuff. And it didn't look like, oh, let me go get this set up. He just trained himself perfectly.
Yeah.
To do it. And it just flowed so well. Of course, he was dancing like a son of a gun, too. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, the light show and how they had the fog and all of it and the choreography. Everything was so scripted, clearly, but just, oh my God. And of course, the musicians he has with him you know, I'm sure Prince, being as meticulous for the presence of that show, probably demanded that same level of commitment in playing your instrument.
Was it a named group, like New Power?
No, it was just Prince.
I know what the Revolution.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, just Prince.
At that point, he just had good musicians.
Yeah, so he clearly... Prince definitely did not skip detail. So you get a minimalist duet, though. Of course, you have that funk guitar because it's Prince. And again, it's going back to the complexities of romantic relationships. I find that theme occurs quite frequently on this particular album, more so than even our previous works. Yeah. I feel that this album is on this list more so because I feel that it is an album in the sense that the songs tie together. They have a theme. The imagery that's used, I see a lot of that. The extended metaphor use, going back to what we were talking about last week with Bono's use of extended metaphor in Joshua Tree, Madonna uses it here very well. And I heard the extended metaphor more on this particular track, I think, than the other ones, if memory serves me correctly.
Cool.
Anything we have that we want to add to that particular song?
No.
Not really?
You got it, basically.
Okay. And then we go to the next song. It's such a bummer.
Oh, man.
Till Death Do Us Part. If I have a song on here that I wish they would have left off, and I get it because it means probably a lot to her personally.
Right.
It's so... I mean, it's a fast-paced song, mm-hmm. and when it gets into it, and you're thinking, oh, man, well, this is going to be cool, and then you start listening to what she's saying, and it's just so depressing and toxic and
yeah,
awful.
I was pretty bored with it. I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, my.
So, apparently, she married... Oh, no. Apparently, no, she did marry Sean Penn.
She did.
Oh.
And I want to say during Sean. That time, Penn, Sean was still heavily involved in alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Heavily. I think he still might.
Because of that thing about him tying her up in something, a closet or something like that?
Yeah. And at that point in time, I just remember he was not in a good way. Right. And he even admitted it. He said that he was.
Mm-hmm.
He married her at the wrong part and time of his life. You hear a lot of domestic challenges, and you clearly can tell this relationship of Madonna and Sean Penn is not working at all. You can clearly tell that.
Mm-hmm.
So that, for me, the contrast in the music and what she's talking about are dynamic. Yeah, just I have a tough time getting through this one, just because of the darkness in the lyrical meaning.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to add anything to that particular track?
No, you're right. I mean, you already said it. It's a dark one.
Yeah,
it's a hard one to get through.
It's, yeah. If there is a hard song to get you on this album, for me, that one was really hard. And then it changes into a reflective piece. Definitely, for me, not the easiest song to get through these days. Promise to Try.
Mm-hmm.
This is, again, about her mom, and particularly how it lingered with her vulnerability and how she just feels sort of like a bit of a piece of her is gone and how that still affects her to this day. I understand that completely. Mm-hmm. I feel that when you're talking about, like, loss, a significant loss of a loved one, like, a part of you, I always feel, stays with that person regardless if they're here or not. And I really related to that particular mm-hmm. element of the song.
I liked that she was talking to her inner child.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that. Like, this is the one that I think I felt the most.
Oh, for sure. And if you don't feel anything from this song, I think you might truthfully be dead inside.
Yeah.
So
I'm dead inside.
I was watching, I saw a little video. She was getting interviewed, and she was asked, like, what would you give up for, you know, all your fame and fortune? Like, would you give up something? She said, yeah, have a mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see that. Because I definitely got that vibe from this song. And, I just felt a lot of that emotional tie-in. That being said, though, I'm glad that that the track order is what it is, because 4 and 5, those are your, like, emotional pieces.
Yeah.
And then someone probably told her, hey, we should probably break this up a little bit, and they do.
Did they say, like, hey?
No. That's right, there are other ones to come, too, that would be, if they put them all together.
Oh, yeah. But the next song is another single, Cherish.
Works really well in spring and summer.
Yes. I didn't know it was about Romeo and Juliet.
Is it really?
It's in the lyrics, man.
Romeo and Juliet.
That's a good metaphor, you're right.
Yeah, no, I thought, you know, it was a metaphor, and then I was listening to it. Oh, no, she's not being clever. She's actually really talking about Romeo and Juliet.
You know what? When I was listening to this, my mind wandered to thinking that I'm pretty certain that Shakespeare was a woman. That's like what I was thinking. I was like, you know what? She would write Romeo and Juliet. Like, that's... And yeah. I was thinking about Romeo and how much he was in love with someone else before Juliet, like how ridiculous that was.
Future podcast.
And how many people had to die over teenagers.
Right, right.
That's silly.
But it's definitely lighthearted. And I never did figure out that it was about Romeo and Juliet. Because I always thought that, I was like, it's just like Romeo, like. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, it's not.
No, exactly.
It's actually.
Yeah.
It's as obvious as it sounds. Cool. So, man. Apparently, I'm a dumbass.
You've heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm a dumbass, too, so.
So I had no idea.
You've also heard it here first.
I don't know anything. So I'm with you.
Apparently, I did not. It should have been as obvious. Sometimes I guess being a middle school teacher, I always try to find the workaround for everything. It can't be as obvious as the straight answer.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Musketeers, then there was the Amigos, now there's us, the three dumbass.
New podcast name.
Yeah.
Well, once we get done the Apple list, we'll start a new one called The Three Dumbasses.
Apparently this song is lame. So, that was the thing. I then put two and two together. And then you have Dear Jesse, which gives me a little bit of the Cure vibes. Because yes. I do compare it to Lullaby by the Cure.
And it's six different ways. No, I'm kidding.
And they do both come out in 1989.
Yeah.
So.
Were they collaborating?
No, yeah, I'm kidding. Collaborating. There's a collaboration with Patrick Leonard. Is that who it's called?
Oh, that was Robert's pen name.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding.
And it's dedicated to his daughter.
Okay.
So,
I guess. His daughter?
Jesse's girl.
Jesse's girl. 8675309.
Right.
Jesse's girl.
We also come up with mashups here.
Who happens to also be Stacy's mom.
Right. That's the.
It's got it going on. Yeah.
And then. The strength here that I found, the imaginative imagery, again going back to the Cure's sort of lullaby, where he used a lot of imaginative, you know, in your head, what you could see.
Right.
The difference here being, this is a little more whimsical, not so much as Spider-Man is trying to eat you at night.
The Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
And I don't really have anything else on that.
Nope.
That was, I really wish I had more notes on that one, but I don't. It's a great track.
It is. You're right.
The next one.
Is this the one I think it is?
This is my least favorite song on the album.
Oh, man. He's going to say what I think he is.
And I'm not going to say it sucks or anything. I just don't like it. Oh, Father.
Oh, man, I knew
that's
you were
okay.
Say that.
I don't like anything. It's one of my. So.
That's true, you're actually. Good.
It is definitely.
We're trying to pick songs out. She's like, I hate everything.
No.
I feel.
I like.
This was the particular song where I feel as if Madonna's therapist is not doing their job.
That was the point of the whole album.
You might need a new therapist. Again, because it's. I'm assuming, like, her dad and her never really got on good terms.
Right.
Doesn't ever sound like it got cleared up.
Did it?
No, I have no idea, but were her mom and dad married and then her mom died? I don't know.
I thought they were separated.
I can imagine that would still, like, be really hard.
If I remember the video correctly, don't they even show a scene where it's a little girl seeing her mom in an open casket and a yeah, and then trying to bond with daddy?
You know? Yeah, this is
yeah. No, I mean if you have two people in grief and y'all, you know,
yeah,
it's a
especially probably a man of his generation,
yeah,
doesn't have what what his daughter needs.
It is. It's a. Yeah, obviously, you know, the themes of authority, there's that reconciliation piece, but I don't really feel that that's a genuine reconciliation. I just have a tough time with how the song is pieced together.
Mm-hmm.
This is my, I'm not saying it's a bad song, I just don't like it. Does that make sense? I don't want people to think I'm saying the song sucks, because I know a lot of people really like it.
Mm.
And it really relates to some people. And that's the cool thing about music. If it relates to you, please enjoy it. And don't let my interpretation of the song ruin your interpretation of the song, because I'm just an idiot talking about music because I like talking about music.
Well, idiot. Let's see. No, I'm just kidding.
Old idiot.
No, I was like, I don't know. I remember when first seeing, I guess, first time I had heard it was the video, and it just, I don't know. I wouldn't say, like, identify with it, but obviously I've not been in that position.
Yeah.
In either, any way, shape, or form. Also reminded me that, like, I like the bridge of that, and just, like a Prayer and Let Me Tell. I always think Madonna has really interesting bridges, or at least in how whoever, if it's her, or whoever's writing with her, comes up with things.
And her production.
Makes
is
you think
something.
Of Makes No Sense by Us. Only that I'm saying I was really proud of where it went. That's what I meant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is a good song.
It was
song.
A different chord progression than the rest of the song. But yeah, very similar. And anyway, yeah, that was getting off. But so I do like her stuff.
So the next track, though, it makes me have a question, because we know that Prince was heavily involved on this particular album.
That son of a...
Now, Prince,
son of a prince.
Prince is a big...
Son of a king.
And a Sly and the Family Stone fan, right?
Yes, right, right. Yes, he was, definitely.
Me
and
too.
And this is another she one. Sly and the Family Stone could clearly hear it on there. So I was wondering if maybe Prince gave her some ideas from Sly and the Family Stone and said, hey, why don't you try this particular construction, particular melody, this particular build. This is the second song where I heard Sly and the Family Stone.
Are they on the top 100?
No.
That's bullshit.
I know.
Guess we'll look at the Spotify one next. No, I'm just kidding.
I'd have to get Spotify at that point, wouldn't I? Oh, yeah. Well, I probably could be able
you
to listen
to
it.
You can use mine.
We can just do it.
I mean...
We'll do it in a future one of Sly's album.
Well, now the interesting part about Sly and the Family Stone, I know there's like a documentary on Hulu right now.
There is,
Sly
yeah.
Is, yeah.
And everyone at work... at lunch is talking about this particular
it's really good.
Documentary, and they were all telling me, Trig, you're diehard into music. Why haven't you watched it? I don't have Hulu.
One of
you
our
can
past
use mine.
Guest people, John Pidell, has way it raves about it. Hi, John. He's seen it.
Hi, John.
I started to watch it, and then it was just late at night. So Hulu and Disney. I guess they're combined, though, aren't they?
I think yeah. They are, yeah.
90% sort of, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's all.
I saw it through Disney, but yeah, Hulu's right.
It's
right,
all an
right.
Oligopoly. Yeah, they own it all.
Yeah.
Maybe one day all the streamers get put together. They can call it cable.
For the low, low
just
price
go.
Of $350
just
a month.
Come around again. That's
you can
hilarious.
Have this one wire
that, one from something I read.
That connects all of your materials. You mean like cable used to be?
Whoa.
Wow.
Okay.
It always comes back around. It always does. Yeah. And I'm assuming at some point in time they're going to bring it back. Just like vinyl's coming back.
But when it comes around.
And CDs.
Yeah, and CDs are now starting to build up in
cassettes on the underground.
Well, interestingly enough, we just did get in some cassettes. So mainly J Dilla, but we are working on getting some more.
Interesting.
We have some more if you want. Would you all sell local stuff there?
That's a good question.
Probably shouldn't ask you on the podcast.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm looking
right
into that. Yeah, putting that in our pocket.
Yeah.
Pinning that one on the wall.
That would be it. Well, I'm assuming if we, you know, frame it in a way, hey, we can get these artists to come in.
Like if there was a room for a little section to put up local stuff.
Also, is there room for a band to play?
There, we're going to have performances. So we're working on it. So obviously we're gonna like do DJ stuff first because we want to show off records, but we're gonna have bands as well.
Fair, okay.
Yeah. We are gonna have bands and stuff as well.
Okay.
Sweet.
Especially if you have material.
We got material.
That would be good.
We're material girls.
Okay, I'll go with that.
That's our
other name. When we're big and we want to play a club again, we'll go the Material Girls.
So,
it's a Madonna tribute band.
But speaking of
tribute,
can we have togetherness in a music store and a band?
Yes.
Keep It Together is about unity. It's about bonding.
Right.
The importance of having a good, strong family bond and unity, which is an interesting place to put it after Oh Father, because I never did. I'm not getting the resolution everyone's talking about on Oh Father, and that's, I think, my issue with it.
Wait, in which way? Because I had actually heard there was, the point lyrically, there was no resolution.
Well, that's what they keep saying. There's reconciliation
there.
Maybe there
was a musical resolution or something like that.
I don't get it. I don't hear it.
No, playing songs, the most aggravating non-resolution ending.
Sorry. All right. Do we want to have anything for Keep It Together?
No, we kept it together.
Okay,
love Spanish Eyes. Keep us together.
Spanish Eyes. This is an interesting use of Latin influences. I don't think this is her first Latin use. It was like,
I was just saying, La Isla Bonita was the other one I was forgetting from True Blue.
Yeah.
And she ended up marrying someone who was Latino.
That also has one of my favorite bridges, too.
Great track. This one, though, not at all a catchy single.
Because it's
very, very sad. And it's very, very slow. And you're going to hear, you know, loss, personal loss, because at this time in 1989, the AIDS epidemic in the United States was tragic. And we were probably 2.5 years away from medications that could really prolong the life of people suffering from AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough here, this whole album where it has these religious contexts, this is the real song where you really get into hearing the questioning of faith and religion in general.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear that, and I always wondered, are we talking about the losses again, and we're talking about questioning our faith because of AIDS? And then also she has some references to gang violence, which was weird, but at the same time, it was interesting to hear the questioning in with the Latin influence and with the whole idea that, you know, sometimes we have to ask questions of a higher power for why things are going the way they're going, and in a very sad and depressing way.
Yeah.
So.
Well put.
The next track is not at all controversial.
Nope, not at all.
Not at all.
Ooh, which one is that?
The last song on the album is Act of Contrition. Again, you have the reversed guitar tracks. And then, to make everyone happy, they distorted the recitation of the Catholic prayer to further go down the, you know, middle finger to religion that was constantly mentioned on this album.
It was the time for doing that, right?
Yeah. And it is definitely, if if Madonna was to make a Prague song, this is the one that's it. I would say this is probably the...
Should we cover it?
In structure, it's her most out there song. If I was going to say of anything I've ever heard, this is by far her least pop track ever, I would say. It was almost kind of as if she called in Brian Eno or something and said, hey, let's do something totally different. Oh, Flaming Lips Wayne Coyne's over in the corner.
Let him, oh, hey, Wayne, what's up?
Yeah, let him piece together something. It's definitely out there. And I could see how people were made uncomfortable by this song.
Right.
So.
But that was her, the height of her powers for doing that. The type of
song. Yeah, do we want to add anything else to that song? Or do we just want to start wrapping up the album?
We can wrap it up.
Okay, so 1989's Like a Prayer by Madonna. I feel this is a statement piece for sure in Madonna. 77 on the list to me feels appropriate, although I found it interesting that it's above a few albums that I definitely feel as if are low on the list. And I feel that the statement piece that it made alone is warrants where it is on the list. I think it's appropriately placed. I want to say last week I disagreed. No, not last week. The week before I disagreed with the placement of both albums, as I had Elton John too high, and I had George Michael way, way too low.
Way too low.
I still think at 91.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? No, that record at the vocal level blew my mind. The only album from the vocalist that I felt more impressed by was the Aretha Franklin album, which so far on this list, by far my favorite one that I've listened to. That was wow. But George Michael vocally is right there. So that one should have been higher. This one is appropriately placed. Definitely feel as if Madonna tried way too hard to top the statement made here in 93 with the Erotica album. And I feel she bordered more on tasteless than trying to challenge people's notions of sexuality. If that makes any sense. Because I feel like you can have those questions. And I feel there is a way to do it.
What did she do that was too much for you?
I feel like the whole idea of standing out on the street trying to hitchhike with a cigarette in your mouth buck naked is like, I don't see.
Well, Alanis Morissette, a few years later.
I just don't see.
Thank you.
Yeah. Was that?
But no.
Did Marilyn Monroe do that?
I don't know, but it's.
I
feel that the song itself, Erotica, but I think Lenny Kravitz wrote that song. If I'm not mistaken, does a better job of challenging the idea of sexuality more so than the imagery she was using for it. But I feel at the time this album was such a statement piece. It was always in the news. Well, what the hell do you do to top it, right? You have to come up with something. Yeah. So I feel maybe that Erotica was more that push to make a statement than it was.
Oh, yeah. Well, then she had this. She did what? First do Vogue and then Justify My Love, which kind of opened up the door to Erotica.
No, Justify My Love, that's the one that Lenny Kravitz wrote.
The song, and then it opened up the door to Erotica.
Yeah, Erotica. But
Bedtime Stories.
And I feel that particular. So I'm almost thinking like she had to top this record. And she went, like, I think overboard.
Oh, and had that. What was that? That. Table book or whatever they call it. Sex.
And I just feel, like what's it? I mean,
and it felt like between that and Bedtime Story, she also kind of goes more into the dance underground, whatever, from Europe and here, and then of course Ray of Light, she comes back out.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. There's some stuff on that album that I really like. The structure, of that are great. I think the visual part somehow isn't the striking image that she is portraying. I feel like it's just over the top, blatant, this is what it is. And I feel that it's not subtle in the album. I just feel that she delivers it more in that way you have to think about what she's trying to say. And the visuals, there's no challenge.
Right.
Does that make sense? Maybe that's what I'm trying to get at.
I think that makes sense, yeah.
So that's where I'm at there. And I guess when you're trying to compare it, because you two sort of had that same challenge that we talked about last week, where do you go from Joshua Tree? It sells 14.7 million albums. Mm-hmm. They're the biggest band in the world at that point.
Yeah.
And then they come out with Rattle and Hum, and the movie's a total flop. So I'm assuming they were probably having questions and saying, well, we definitely can't make another Joshua Tree, because if we do, it's going to flop. Mm-hmm. So they come out with Octoon Baby, totally wildly different album, much heavier, much darker, much grittier, a lot of satire. Bono's playing a character. He's not even Bono.
Well, you could do that.
So you could be Mephisto, I guess. I don't know.
The Fly, and then Mephisto.
Yeah. So we just got to get her those big cataract glasses. Grandma, yeah. Did you have your cataract?
Well, let me tell you, buddy. Let me tell you a story about it.
Let me tell you a story about artists and thieves. Ooh. They all kill themselves for inspiration.
Inspiration.
And sing about their grief.
I'll show you inspiration.
I still love that line by Bono, though. That might be my favorite line. Of course, it's from my favorite song, so it naturally makes sense.
Oh, naturally.
Naturally.
Naturally. So, let's go into an artist who is clearly inspired by Madonna.
I don't see it.
You don't see it at all, yeah. You neither. Not
I just thought she was like a Joni Mitchell and... No, I'm kidding. No.
I would also... Good artist. I'm going to say that I feel... When we get into the Joni Mitchell album, I feel that every single woman on this list almost have been inspired by the album Blue by Joni Mitchell. I'm not a huge Joni Mitchell fan, but that is an absolute must-own album. I feel, I don't care what your favorite genre of music is, you should own that record. It's okay. Great. I think I'm going to compare that one to Carole King's Tapestry, because I couldn't really think of anything else to compare it to. And I would venture to say that most people consider Carole King one of, if not the best, songwriter of the 70s. So why not go with those two, because I feel they're both well-written albums.
Another Pleasant Valley Sunday.
So, the one that we're going to listen to next is from 2009. I believe it's 89 on the list. So they're actually saying this album is better than George Michael's Listen Without Prejudice Volume 1. No offense, no it's not.
She is a good artist.
It's a good artist. She has good songs, and there are songs I do like. There are songs on this album I do like. It is not better than Listen Without Prejudice Volume 1. I'm going to disagree there.
Well, maybe as they made the list, they were getting people that were slightly younger.
Well,
that's
yeah.
Also why I think, you know, number one was not who I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, we were having that conversation yesterday when we were closing up. Ant was very much in disagreement with the number one being Lauryn Hill. And he's a big Lauryn Hill fan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's like, he didn't think it should be
number one.
Okay.
He was like, over Thriller. And I said, and I said, well, I guess the only knock you could have on Thriller is that I would argue not necessarily an album, but a collection of singles that all happen to be flipping amazing songs.
Mm-hmm.
But I would venture to say there's really no cohesive bond to any song on that album. If there was a knock that'd be had. And that being said, I'm going to geek out because I love the record.
Right, right. Okay.
So, if there's a knock there, maybe that's it.
Stay tuned, fans.
So, there's the Fame Monster. There's like 80 gazillion versions of this particular album available. Originally released in 2009. I listened to the first 8 tracks of the, I guess, EP version.
Yeah, that is what we're doing. We're not going to touch on Paparazzi and all that stuff.
I don't think we need to talk about 20-something songs.
Of course, she'll sing it. I'll just start naming them. But Just Dance.
Interestingly enough,
it's going to be okay.
This is one of the darkest pop albums I think I've ever listened to.
Yeah.
It's definitely, the music and the lyrics are not in sync with each other.
I always think she had these, and before we start, like, it seemed like, because she was doing another run of touring across the world, and it's like, maybe just like, but this isn't quite what I see as a completely new album, so I have these songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they turned out to be a lot of more hits, too. So.
Yeah. So, Bad Romance is the opening track.
Hit it.
Interestingly enough, when she talked about how she was using Nine Inch Nails and The Cure and Marilyn Manson and all that stuff for inspiration on the new album.
Iron Maiden. Oh, the new album. Sorry, I was like,
yeah. I definitely got elements of the goth inspiration listening to the lyrics. Even, of course, the hook being ra ra
la 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 ga ga ah ah ah. Oh, Jabron Miles.
So
thank you.
This is not. Yeah, this is not a happy song. You're dancing to it. It's almost kind of like when I listened to the ballad version of Mad World.
Ah.
The cover.
Gary Jules.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. And I said, that can't possibly be the lyrics. Why is he getting it wrong? Played it. Holy shit, that's what they were singing. I'm sitting there bopping out to it. This is the darkest damn song I've ever listened to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tears for Fears are dark.
Yeah. No, just kidding. But I never really got how dark until I really got into it.
How dark was it?
But this,
as dark as this room is getting.
Yeah, so I know. I was thinking we might need to start cranking some light on here soon, guys. Okay. I'm getting to the point where I'm not of the age where I can see really well at night.
I did
So we've got those complexities of love. Of course, it mixes with that catchy chorus.
Right.
Love, of course, being exhilarating, but it's also painful. That's what I'm hearing there. And we keep going into that sort of weird style of the lyrics not matching the music. Moving into Alejandro, which is track two.
Oh, man. Another good one right
there. Alejandro.
She was very fun around this era. You could almost not go wrong DJing any of her stuff.
No.
I did that.
It definitely is inspired by ABBA, Ace of Base, that particular style of music from Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
Now, apparently, at that time, wasn't she dating like several people? And I feel that the lyrics were kind of talking about those three people that she was dating.
I see what you're saying.
And I don't know necessarily at the same time, but around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And she was sort of saying goodbye to those romances, those bad romances.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I feel that the song definitely is in the right place because it lyrically, I feel that it's telling the same story from the previous song, but moving the story forward.
Yeah.
So a very good place to put it. Any thoughts beyond that?
I don't know. This album, I used to put used to listen to it in the car with when Ami was real little.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of our bangers.
This and the fame, you know, because like I was going to say it's at the end, but like I caught this tour at the very end when the encore was this new song about to come out called Born This Way. That's when it was. Right. And it's like all these songs, basically everything that's on this almost, and everything from the fame was at this show. She opened with Dance in the Dark. It was an amazing show. And at the time, I knew about her love for metal, and I was like, oh, I can see the Maiden influence in the visual presentation.
For sure.
And also, because I always bring this up, we'll say that she showed up to work as a crew hand. Is that the right word? Stagehand.
Yeah.
For Iron Maiden for two of their shows around Florida. And Nico McBrain, their drummer, was so impressed. She had no entourage, did not ask for a break. I don't know why she did this other than maybe a chance to be near Iron Maiden. I almost said Nine Inch Nails, but
Iron Maiden.
This is completely off subject. Sorry.
Iron Maiden.
Yes.
What did she say with Nine Inch Nails? She said she gets tongue tied around Trent.
Speaking of Iron Maiden. The next song is called Monster.
That's not Iron Maiden. No.
And
it's me.
There are some heavy drums in this one. So
I was listening to
like
this.
Like Iron Maiden.
I wonder if I could play this during a bout when you're out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I always go to Animal, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Now this,
animals, monsters,
yeah,
same
that's
thing.
True. I didn't think about it.
Well, this song,
it's Monster.
There's that one sticker that you have with like a monster and like a heart or something. This song kind of reminds me of that sticker.
sticker?
Yeah, like that she has. It was like a
monster. Oh, the monster. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it does talk about a heart-eating monster. That was where I was going with it. Wants to discuss the fear of relationships and vulnerability.
Oh, gosh.
And the dangers of falling for the wrong person. Mm-hmm. So again, we're sticking with a narrative and we're moving it forward. And she's doing a very good job of that. So that was where I was really noting that today. I thought she was doing a great job of moving it forward. Now keep in mind, I've listened to this album, about 2 hours ago, trying to get ready for it.
You did a great job.
So I tried my best to piece together something. I was computer out. I said, oh, I can get this done.
Yep. And you did.
So, but yeah, that sticker was that you had. I was reminded of that when I heard this song. Because I said, that is the perfect visual for this song.
Was that the inspiration for the sticker?
No, not at all. I mean, yeah, sure.
Oh, okay.
Well, you can say it is now and sell it for an additional $4. I don't know.
Four extra dollars.
And wow, some representative of Gaga's contacting you to design stickers.
Yeah.
You should have made it.
You should have gone with it. We could have sent it to Gaga. Look, this was the inspiration for the sticker.
Right. Totally made him out.
Totally blew that one. I'm trying to make you money.
Yes.
Now.
Oh, now.
We get the change up. Because the first three tracks, you know, have that, the synths, and the big, and the boom, and the that, and the pow. Mm-hmm. And then we switch it up to a 1970s ballad, because why the hell not? Speechless is the fourth track.
Speechless.
Definitely abusive relationships. So I feel there might be a theme with bad romance. Mm-hmm. Personal anguish. Now, I will say that Gaga's vocals on this song are great. Really showcases her ability to actually sing. I feel some of her earlier songs, like Poker Face, definitely hide her ability to sing.
Yeah.
This song definitely does not. The guitar riffs definitely complement her vocals very well. I got elements of Queen here. Are we in agreement?
Yeah, I can hear that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, another song talking about health issues of a parent. I felt more like this was a heartfelt plea to getting her father's health back. That's what I heard.
Oh, yeah. That's like a stage in grief.
Yeah.
she's there.
Bargaining.
Yep. Mm.
And I can see this showing like some of her, you know, other stuff that wasn't shown maybe in the fame as much for her growing as a musician when she was first starting out. Like I said earlier, you know, I mean, like, and it leads to later, like, you can go, oh, yeah, and she did that stuff with Tony Bennett and stuff like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And even that stuff she did on that movie that, with what?
The one with Bradley Cooper?
Yes, it was the remake of that other movie.
Stars Born.
Yeah.
I need to see that. I've heard it's very good.
I heard it's good.
It's a downer, Dan. But, well, I mean, yeah, it's expected. It's a good movie, though, yes.
It's not like Control, right?
Wow. Funny you say. Wait a minute. Do you already know the ending?
It doesn't leave you hanging, does it?
That also applies. Never mind. I was like, wait. Of all movies you pulled out. I guess 24-hour party people can be shot the same way. One part of it doesn't leave you hanging.
I guess.
I don't know what's going on.
Ian Curtis
controls the movie made by the photographer
Anton Corbin.
It ends with Ian hanging himself.
Yeah.
It's been out for a while, and that also plays into the ending of Star is Born. I was like, did you really pull that out just for that reason?
Yeah.
Well, that was a good one, Trigger.
Yeah, it was.
You're welcome.
Very good. He does like to say it always leaves you hanging, just like he says, what does so-and-so have in common with Michael Jackson?
MJ.
Because I am going to the lowest rung of hell.
Well, I just mean any time I'm always like, is he playing a joke on me? He'll text me and say, like, what is so-and-so? Like, oh, man, they died.
Yeah. Sadly, what does George Foreman have in common with
Joe? I heard. That I was know. Yesterday?
Yesterday. Yeah. And, of course, what was it? Last week it was...
Foreman Grill.
Last week it was...
Oh,
what,
no, I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, it was... Last week it was Brian James of the Damned, and the week before that it was David Johansen.
Yeah.
Now, and then Marianne Faithful went not too long ago either. Mm-hmm. Now, I found two records in our stash. Oh, I found one Marianne Faithful today, and yesterday I found a David Johansen.
Oh, cool.
Marianne Faithful does not have the death price bump. David Johansen does. So I kind of felt bad. And I'm wondering if it's just because Marianne Faithful is more known for the fact that she was involved with Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
Because she does have some pretty decent music.
Huh.
And let's not hide the fact that, again, when we talk about people who are absolutely stunningly beautiful in the 60s and 70s.
Is she another one of those?
She was a stunner.
What the heck?
A stunner. Yes. I was unbelievably wowzers.
They're going to say, and then, like, of course, in the later 90s, some people would know her name as, and that Metallica song.
Yeah.
That girl was a single, and she's in the video.
Yeah.
Oh.
But
good for her.
I mean, you know what I mean, but it's like, she did all this other stuff.
I was kind of hoping for a bump, but no.
No bump.
The David Johansen was a live album. I can't remember exactly the name, but we have it there. I want to say it's priced at $8.
So I wonder if the Foreman Grills went up in sales.
I'm sure they will.
I'm going to write this down to look up later.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
Like, I wonder if it got a bump when it was featured in The Office.
And speaking
of... I love The Office.
Yeah. Speaking of beautiful women, the next track is about beautiful women.
Whoa.
And I'm almost kind of like, is the reason the lights are off is because of this track?
Yes.
Dance in the Dark.
So sexy.
Dance in the Dark.
Definitely this. A song about a woman who prefers intimacy with the lights off.
Ooh.
Because she is very insecure about her personal looks.
Oh, that's why.
I don't.
Like I said, yeah, hearing. I got a new appreciation for this one. I heard this opening up a tour, a show. That was great.
So we have tragic figures mentioned. Oh, speaking of women that were considered gorgeous, yeah. Marilyn Monroe, Sylvia Plath,
Diana.
Yeah. So we have that exploration of self-image. And again, this is one of the things I've always been so damn frustrated with. We put so much pressure, especially on young people now, to look a certain way. That they have to look like this, and there's so much pressure to look a certain way. And everybody is going to look different. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it, we all get old and ugly. There's nothing you can do about it.
That's why I stopped looking in the mirror.
I
do only when I have to.
Chasing the fountain of youth is just, it's not worth it. And I feel like it puts a lot of self-image issues, and I feel not just image issues, how not just you see yourself physically, but how you value your worth. I was looking at a recent picture of Perry Farrell. Dude has had some serious work done recently.
Was it that one when he just his first public appearance back?
Yeah, with his wife.
Yeah. And he looked like he did have more done.
Yeah, he's had a lot done.
Just since that Lala thing.
Because he's still swollen. And
I think people are forgetting that what makes us unique is not looking like other people.
Right, yeah.
Right.
And everyone starting to look the same.
And you know, I'm not here to shame plastic surgery. You can do what you need to do. But I look at that and I wonder if a lot of the issues about it, his physical appearance, are what is also leading to the drug use, the alcohol relapses.
The low self-esteem.
Yeah.
The not knowing unconditional love.
Yeah, and that leads me to this particular song, and I hear that kind of stuff in it here. So, a powerful tune. And which is weird how it, you know, it starts off, you're like, oh, this is going to be a dirty track. And then you start realizing, no, it's more of a reflective, introspective song. And it left me with more questions than answers. And I feel that is the mark of a well-written song, especially when you're talking about a song of this topic.
So mm-hmm. we gotta leave them with more questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm writing this down.
Okay.
Yeah.
No answers. All questions.
But yeah, I know. I just definitely feel that when you, if these are the topics you're embracing, yeah, I feel if it's well written, the audience should have more questions than they had before they heard the song.
Yeah, it is a song. You're right. Mm-hmm. It's a marked song.
Next track, I believe, is a single too, right? Telephone with Beyonce.
Yep. Because then she had one on her album. That was another collaboration. Mm-hmm. I forget what that song's called. But
no, originally, if I'm not mistaken, didn't Gaga write this song for Britney Spears?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I heard.
Yeah,
I
think that's right.
So I'm not just pulling that out of my ass, right?
You're on top of it.
Okay.
You're on top of it, Trigger.
The collaboration, of course. And I agree. This one, I related to because I am a teacher, and it's not that I don't love my job. I do. But at the end of the day, my social battery is
done.
Fucking done.
Yep. That's why I'm not a teacher, to be honest. That's what I went to school for.
I just...
Really?
Yeah. Okay. To be an elementary school art teacher, and I couldn't do it.
The end of the day... And the crappy part is this year's crop of kids, mm-hmm. and if one is listening, I know it's going to come back and bite me in the ass, is probably, as a general whole, probably one of the best groups I've ever had. I really do enjoy their personalities and how they are able to make connections to things through how they see life in general. I enjoy the conversations I have. So that being said, the desire to escape that pressure of constant communication, Jesus Christ, do I agree.
Yeah.
And understand that.
Yeah.
In this case, now she wants to go out and sort of be on a dance floor instead of having to deal with it. For me, I just want to go home, you know, look into my box of records, pop one on the player, cuddle with my doggy, and do nothing else.
When I was student teaching, I was like, oh, I have to have lunch with people. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just want to be alone. And that was at lunchtime.
Yeah.
I get it.
And right. How about having to choke it down? You forget that part.
Right.
Or in my favorite case, I have a couple of students... With cafeteria is very overwhelming for them, and I understand why.
Yeah.
So, usually who has to go catch that meltdown? This guy.
Yeah.
So, my lunch gets cut even shorter, and I can't bring food back into my classroom this year because, sadly, like, all of my kids are allergic to everything but air.
No.
So...
That's been a thing.
Yeah, it's gotten real... This year, it's really bad. And I have to constantly go to my kids. I'm like, hey, you can't eat in here. Why not? Mm-hmm. Food allergies. So, but the, going back to the telephone thing, the constant communication, the pressures of trying to escape it, I understand that. And I say that even loving the students I have this year. It's really hard when you have a difficult group of kids and then your social battery's done at 1 o'clock and you still have 3 classes to go.
Oh. Yep.
We are just, the mess around portion of the show, kids, is over. You are now entering find out.
Mm-hmm.
Is where
F around and find out.
Yeah. So I get that. I thought that the Beyonce and Lady Gaga played very well together on this track. In fact, it's probably one of my favorite tunes of Beyonce. Not that I dislike Beyonce, but yeah, I feel like she did a great job here. Anything else?
No. I mean, it was fun. It's good visuals.
Yep.
Per usual for Lady Gaga.
Yeah. The next song is So Happy I Could Die. I almost feel that this is ironic in a sense.
Don't you think?
Or maybe not ironic.
I think it's a little too ironic.
Yeah, sarcastic, cynical.
Yeah.
It's a song about masturbation.
What?
Masturbation.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about the penis. The vagina. Do you find that funny, buddy? And most importantly, we're going to be talking about masturbation. Sorry, I had to...
Wait, what was that from?
Beavis and Butthead. The episode where they couldn't laugh for a whole week or they were going to get sent to...
That's right.
to the school for degenerates. Oh, and then the bell rings. And then they come back. And then he said penis.
And then he said masturbation.
He's here all week.
And this is why I'm eternally 12, because that shit will never not be funny to me. I'm still the guy who laughs at farts.
He does.
So, I think fart jokes are funny. And it's really bad because I can't laugh at work because it will totally distract the kids.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm like, that's not funny. And I'm sitting inside like, that's fucking hilarious. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. There's something wrong with me. But again, this is talking about self-empowerment. It's about personal pleasure, being with yourself, drinking, smoking, dancing, and masturbating. As the kids would say, gooning.
Where's that from?
I don't know, and I don't want to know.
I hear that.
Yeah, that's what they're talking about.
Okay.
Learn something new, didn't you?
Goonies?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I think.
If you say Goonies now, they're not talking about the movie.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. So, they keep saying, we're Goonies. Stop it. I know what it is. They're like, Mr. Trigger, how do you know that? There is a website called Urban Dictionary, kids. I can find out everything. And no.
So I'm a smart man, y'all.
Yeah.
That changed the meaning of that. Was it Goonies Never Die? Say Die? Or
Okay. Last song of the major EP minus the remix of Bad Romance is Teeth.
Oh, y'all more rama.
Which fits perfectly with the albums we've done because we start with gospel influence and we're going to end, my friends, with gospel influence. Teeth.
Man, you should see
dominant beats. You have the take a bite of my bad girl meat.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a line that definitely stuck out to me. Suggesting themes of seduction yet assertiveness. She's taking command of this one. Encouraging listeners, though, to show their true selves who they are. So you have that bit of the sexual stuff, but you also, because Lady Gaga, I do believe, wants you to think when you're listening to her music.
Right.
Definitely shows that in there.
She's Italian.
And she talks about the idea of being true to yourself, and that's, at the end of the day, the most important thing.
Yeah, express yourself. Don't repress yourself.
Yes. Thank you, Madonna. So, if you ever wanted to know where's the Madonna influence, this song right here, definitely, if it is not a nod to the first album we talked about today, I would be totally surprised, because I feel that has to be the influence here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being
said... Hodge agrees.
Yeah. That being said, I do want to say...
It's a Rogers neighborhood.
I do want to say that I feel in the 8 songs we've talked about today...
Mm-hmm.
What I loved about it is there is a cohesiveness to the storytelling that Lady Gaga has.
Mm-hmm.
But it also starts to show us that she's more than a pop star.
Yes.
There's thematic content. Being unafraid of being who you are and saying that sometimes who you are is complicated. And sometimes you have to understand that being complicated and understanding that complexity within yourself is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that is an absolutely amazing concept to tell. I do really gain an appreciation for who Lady Gaga is today, folks. I will say that. I'm going to be honest. I am not the target audience for Lady Gaga.
Oh, but yes, you are. No.
But I definitely...
Monster is.
I definitely grew an appreciation. I love that. And I think that's part of the reason why I wanted to do this list. I wanted to listen to albums outside of my comfort zone and maybe come up with something that I found interesting unique or gain an appreciation for an artist. So the first half of Travis Scott's Astroworld, love it.
That's true.
Listen to that album again. Yeah, I'm still struggling with the second half, even knowing that it just falls apart. And I was talking about it really at the record shop, and everyone agreed with me that I get the first half of that album's brilliant. And then it just, it was like, okay, we've run out of ideas, so just put something out there. But I love the production of the first half and how this, like the dreaminess to the ruggedness, to the harshness, to the back to the dreaminess. The SZA album, I did not anticipate loving like I do. I've listened to that record now since I bought it 7 or 8 times. I'm growing more. The track that she did with Phoebe, dear God, someone convince them to make an entire album. Holy shit, is that a great song.
I don't remember. Hi.
But Lady Gaga, same thing.
Stop telephoning me.
Oh, yeah. She got me.
I definitely, much like those albums, gained an appreciation for. So that's what this for me is all about. Mm-hmm. And moving forward, I'm hoping to find more albums like this that I did not expect to like but do like. That said, next week we are doing some albums I like. going on a limb here, guys. I'm going to really push myself.
Ooh, what?
With Portishead Dummy and Blue Lines by Massive Attack. Man. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you real quick that Blue Lines by Massive Attack is hands down the best trip-hop album ever recorded. And I'm not going to apologize for fanboying on it. And the number two best trip-hop album ever recorded is Portishead's Dummy. Wow. And I'm not going to apologize for fanboying on that one either. Those two albums are the shit.
Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a third one, too.
And there's going to be a third one we're going to throw in because I felt like this particular album has that dark, mysterious sound as both of those records do have. And that's going to be the album by Burial on the list, I believe, at 92. Mm. So all three are on the list.
Burial.
And I feel like we kind of need to play a little bit of catch up because we have had two shows now recently that we had to pair something off the list with because nothing worked.
Because it was fun.
It was fun, but yeah, nothing paired with Nirvana. Also, I looked it up. Nirvana's Nevermind, even with the death bump, has still not outsold 10. Mm. It has sold 13.7 million albums. 10 is at 15.6.
I bet you I know why.
Why is that?
Because Pearl Jam's better.
No.
I knew it was going to be something.
But, you know, I was... But I just remember saying, and everyone's like, well, Nirvana defined the genre. And I said, you all are remembering it from nostalgia goggles. Because I'm telling you right now, when I remember watching MTV at the time, there was like two artists that got televised. It was Pearl Jam, Dr. Dre, Pearl Jam, Dr. Dre.
Do you think Weird Al had a hand in that? Because he did not parody Pearl Jam.
No, he didn't.
Right? Nirvana, I think, was the only one that he did.
Out of the grunge ones, obviously, yeah, and it's not a knock, they do it really well. Pearl Jam is probably the most accessible.
Yeah, they were
all of them. Yeah,
well, they were more straightforward rock.
Change is really probably dark for people, and Soundgarden gets out there, not counting when they went Super Unknown. But before.
Yeah, I would say Super Unknown is where they kind of, I don't know if they left metal, but they were definitely leaning more into, hey, we need to be grunge.
Even though, looking at, like, when they're at Lollapalooza, Doc, when they're talking about, you know, by the time they started it, Pearl Jam was much bigger than they should have been second on the day. They should have been later at the night. Everybody was tearing the things down. It's all these guys. Probably looks like the very same people Kurt Cobain did not like seeing in his audience.
Yeah.
You guys make fun of me, but yeah, Pearl Jam is that accessible. I mean, even when they push the, they like dress sometimes like in basketball attire. Like, they like stuff like that.
I mean,
that's cool.
Playing Mookie Blaylock.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, it makes sense. It's Mookie Blaylock reference. Now, ironically, all of my kids talking about basketball and all this stuff. Like, Mr. Shooter, what do you know about basketball? And then I put the Mookie Blaylock picture up there. Who's that?
Mookie Blaylock.
I think Kelly has a Mookie Blaylock card.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So we had that. And of course, last week, Octoon Baby. And I feel Octoon Baby makes sense because if we don't have that album, I'm definitely not doing this. So, and again, still a very important album. for me. It's not my favorite anymore, but just what I get out of it is huge. But next week, I said, we're going to get into the Massive Attack. We're going to get into the Burial. We're going to get into Portishead. I'm thinking after that, I want to go... I want to stay in the electronic genre. I want to do Kraftwerk and Daft Punk. Are y'all good with that?
Okay.
I wish we could do the Man Machine.
Well, we could always just do two Kraftwerks. We got some more coming.
We got to get this list done. We'll be doing this list. They'll have like three new lists. We'll still be on this one.
Just fine, dang it.
We're still on the first list. That was the one they got
that'd
it right.
That'd be a good comparison, Kraftwerk to Daft Punk.
But, here's my thing, and the reason I wish it was the Man Machine is because I feel that Daft Punk listened to the Man Machine and made an entire career out of it. And the amount of samples from the Man Machine that are on everything is insanity.
Mm-hmm. I was looking into that with the Apple stuff, what they were saying, and they do very much mention that, but the impact with the Afrika Bambaataa Planet of Rock.
I guess so. But
even though like Kraftwerk directly did not have anything to do with hip hop, they just happened to have a sample that was on a very big
But see, that's the thing. We're talking about influence on other people. George Clinton, where the hell is he?
Yeah.
So
I thought Trans Europe Express.
Don't get me wrong, I like Trans Europe Express. The Man Machine. That's a damn near perfect electronic record. There's not a song in there I dislike.
Hell, we had the Man Machine ass. Get Noah on here.
I mean, and the vinyl that I have sounds amazing. So, pretty happy there.
I got it.
Nice.
So, with that being said, folks, life is too short to drink bad coffee and listen to bad music. I'm Triggered for Hodge and Monster. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.